Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 5th of Sivan. I hope you don't mind if I note that this is sort of an anniversary, because it was last year for the 7th of Sivan, the second day of Shavuot in Chutz Laaretz, outside of Israel, but just a regular Isru Chag, a regular day after Yom Tov in Israel. Now, we started this series. We did 5 days a week rather than 7 days a week, so we did skip Fridays and Shabbos all throughout the year, so there's what to be made up, but 5 of Sivan marks the end of a cycle, and so it's with special gratitude to the OU, to Rabbi Jacob Bromwich, to David Hochhauser for their help with this shiurim, that we embark upon today's shiur, today's responsum for the 5th of Sivan. It's from Shut Sri De'ej, the first volume, the responsum number Kuf Zion. And it's actually a response to a question that was written. The question was written on the 5th of Sivan, but it was a topic and a respondent that I wanted to get a chance to get to, so I cheated a little bit. So the 5th of Sivan is when the question was addressed, and it was a question from a doctor. When it in the book of response, when he puts it down, when he publishes it, he reads that Dr. William Roth in New York, who I tried to look up, didn't find very much about, who signs his own request question, Yekutiel Zev Roth. So he thinks of himself in his Hebrew name, but he's known, I guess, as William Roth. The Sri De'esh refers to him as Nadvan Mefursam, a very generous, a well-known benefactor, an industrialist or a businessman who has a lot of business, who also learns a great deal of Torah, has already learned Shas several times. That's the way that he introduces him. So the question that this Dr. William or Yekutiel Zev Roth sends to the Tzitzit Eliezer from New York on the 5th of Sivan is a discussion of a previous discussion of the Sri De'esh. The Sri De'esh had a whole discussion that we're not going to be able to get to, because this interaction itself will be long enough to fill our time. But earlier on in the book, in Siman Tzadi, starting at Ot Dalid, and then also later on in that responsum, the Sri De'esh had discussed the question of called the Mekadesh Adata de Rabbanan Mekadesh, whether it applies in our times. The principle in the Gemara of called the Mekadesh Adata de Rabbanan Mekadesh is that, to some extent, the Gemara seems to assume, and the mechanics of it will be something that will come up later in this response, I mean, the Sri De'esh's response to this guy, but it's something along the lines of that when somebody marries a woman, when a man marries a woman, and he gives her kiddushin, and he says, I want you to be betrothed to me, I want you to be sanctified to me, I want you to be the lone, I want me to be the lone woman in your life, right? Whatever that that formula of Harei HaMekudesh Li accomplishes, that there is an assumption in the Gemara that's done with the understanding that Chazal are the ones in charge of that. It's a data de Rabbanan. It is with their consent, and therefore with their limitations on it, and that therefore makes the possibility of Ki'inu Rabbanan, the Kiddushin Mine, that creates the possibility that in certain circumstances, the Rabbanan can decide to uproot that Kiddushin, to declare that it's not there anymore whatsoever. That comes up in the Gemara several times, as we'll get to a little bit in the response, but I'll give you just one example. The Gemara talks about the possibility if a man makes a shliach get, if a man has decided to divorce his wife, and he can't go to the divorce himself, he has the legal right to create a messenger, and he empowers the messenger. He tells the messenger, I want you to go divorce my wife for me, and he gives him the get, and it's all working out well. Let's suppose there's some time delay in which that messenger has to get to the woman. If the man's in Russia and the woman's in California, especially in olden times, it would take some time to get there. Let's suppose in that intervening time, the man realizes that it's a mistake. He does not wish to divorce his wife. He made a mistake. So he wants to nullify the messenger. Now, ordinarily with messengerships, that's a possibility. If the messenger has not yet accomplished his task, then the person who sent him has the ability to say, I don't want that person to be my messenger anymore. So Chazal required that he do it in front of two witnesses. You know what I'm forgetting right now? That to nullify the messenger, I think they required that he need to do it in front of two witnesses. Otherwise, they didn't want it to work. Now, that's not a halachic requirement. That was their worry about that the word wouldn't get to the woman in time. She would have a messenger come to her. The messenger would tell her that she was divorced. She would believe it because the messenger had given her a divorce, and she might not hear about the nullification of the messenger in time. She would go marry somebody else, and all sorts of terrible things would happen. She would end up unwittingly having what would halakhically count as an extramarital affair, and that we don't want that. So Chazal said, you know what, we're not going to allow that, and therefore in some of those situations, we're going to say the marriage is over anyway. So the question is, how can the marriage be over anyway? He was mevatel the shliach. He said he didn't want the shliach to have effect anymore, and halakhically, if a person sends a messenger to do something, and before the messengership gets accomplished, the person who sent them says, you're not my messenger anymore. They're not their messenger anymore. So there's not like, they're stuck. So there the Gemara says, this would be one example. The Gemara says, Afkeinu Rabban and Lekidushin Mine, that Chazal decided they would uproot that Kiddushin because of the consequences of leaving her married to him, and yet she'll think she's not married to him. They were Mafkia the Kiddushin, they uprooted the Kiddushin. The question that Sri Deish was entertaining was whether or not that principle can be applied today, and it has all sorts of ramifications. We'll see. So, this Dr. Yekutiel Ze'ev Roth says, I'm surprised that you didn't quote what's written in the Sefer Mekor Mayim Chaim. The Sefer Mekor Mayim Chaim, I found online on HebrewBooks.org, has a copy of it online. And it's like, it was printed, as far as I can tell, in 1836. So it's an achron on these halachos. It's from Yaakov Meir Padva, who's somebody, but nobody that I particularly know. So he's quoting this book as if it's obvious that Sri Deish should know the book. I'm not sure why. But he says, let me quote him a little bit. In Gittin Lamed Gimel Lamed Aleph, it says, the Kol Mekadesh Zed Rabban Kadesh, the Rabban can uproot the Kiddushin. And so this Rav Yaakov Meir Padva in Sefer Mekor Chaim says, and I saw the Ra'avan, who was an ancestor, perhaps a grandfather, but at least an ancestor of the Rush. The Ra'avan is in Germany. The Ra'avan had written that this idea of Afkeinu, that was only in the time of the Chachamim HaRishonim, the time of Chazal. They had the power to be Mafkia Kiddushin, but nowadays we don't have the power to be Mafkia Kiddushin. Now just to think about the stakes today, theoretically, if we said we had the power to be Mafkia Kiddushin today, then if a situation came up that made it a problem, we could say they wanted Mafkia Kiddushin. An example that's not political is, let's suppose in the times of the Gaonim and a little bit later, they decided that any marriage should happen in front of 10 people. And that was just a way to make sure that marriages got well known and to give them the proper ceremony and pomp and circumstance and all those issues. So let's say they wanted to make the rules so strong, they would say, if you don't get married in front of 10 people, it's not a marriage. Can they say that? So, since halachically, Api Din Torah, by Torah law and by the law of the Gemara, there was no need for 10 people. By the law of the Gemara, there's only need for 2 people, for 2 witnesses, 2 valid witnesses, and then the marriage is considered to have been accomplished. Then you'd say to yourself, well, how could it be that a later rule can come along and say it's not a marriage? So it might be that you'd say, because of Afkeinu Rabban, we could say that if you do this kind of a marriage, we from now on are deciding that it's not a valid marriage. We're going to uproot that marriage and therefore make it not valid. So the Ravan is saying, we don't have that power anymore. They had that power. We no longer have that power. And therefore, the Ravan had said, Be'uvda de ones de shchiach velo shchiach, an example of another case where there's afkeinu, would be, let's say a man gives a get on a t'nai. So there are times when this isn't a negative thing. For example, when travel is dangerous and people can get lost at sea and stuff like that and can be lost for a long time, you can imagine a man, to protect his wife, would say, I have to go on this journey, whatever the reason, he has to go on the trip. I have to go on this trip, it's very dangerous, I'm nervous about the consequences. If I'm not back within a year, this should be your get. Let's say he says it just that way. If I'm not back within a year, this should be your get. So comes the last day, and he's across the bridge from the town, but the bridge is out, right? The bridge, you know, fell, the bridge got washed away in a flood. The bridge is out, he has no way to get there. So the Gemara talks about a man saying, look, I'm here. Meaning he's trying to say, I don't want the get to take effect. Question is, do we allow for the idea that things beyond his control when it comes to a get can mean that the get won't take effect? So they say that no, and they say that we don't worry about, because if you start worrying about onus, then you'd have a big problem, because let's say a man doesn't show up at all within the year, but then comes 2 months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 or 6 months later and proves that there was some terrible onus, some terrible coercion that kept him from coming back, and wants to say the get should never have taken effect because there's an onus, and if you hold by that, then you're going to have this big problem, because women will get married again innocently and end up still being married to their husbands. And therefore, the Gemara says, Afkeinu. So the Ravan says, we nowadays don't say that, because he thinks, the Ravan holds, we nowadays cannot apply this rule on our own of Afkeinu Rabban. And so if there came up in a situation of an onus, we wouldn't say, sorry, the marriage is over anyway because the get was given, and we don't care about onus and get. And then he says this Sefer Mekor Chaim says he also heard a case from Yaakov, who was the head of the Beis Din in Karlin. It was a Rav in Karlin, that he had a case where a man had tried to do bitul get b'fnei chad, in front of only one witness. So that's the situation that I said in the Gemara. You had that the Gemara said, no, we won't allow that to constitute bitul of the shliach. We won't allow that to constitute a nullification of the messenger, because we're worried that she won't hear about it and we'll get married. And he too, this Rav Yaakov of Parkelin, said, since the reason is that we're worried about her remarrying in its Afka'inu case. We don't today say Afka'inu according to the Ra'avan, and he thought there was a Gemara by Metzia, Tzadivav Amidbet, that made that very clear. Baal benichse ishto mimal nim'alu beitin. So there's no question about whether the husband is or isn't allowed to use his wife's property. If she has some property that belongs to Hekdesh and he uses it, who was the one who committed the Me'ilah, right? To accidentally or unwittingly use property that belongs to Hekdesh, belongs to the Beit HaMikdash, is a financial property of the Beit HaMikdash, that is a prohibition, a sin called Me'ilah. And the question is, who is it who did the Me'ilah? So Rashi there says, Beitin shel Yisrael shebe oto dor, shekol tekanot mishpat tluya bahen, vayedehen nohagot chukot hamedukanin matzibor. We said the Beitin of that generation, because in every generation, any rulings that we have are based on the Bate Din, the Jewish halachic courts of that time. And therefore, when the husband misuses his wife's possessions, the fact that he had the right to use them at all is as if they were the ones who gave it to him. That's what Rashi seems to understand in that Gemara there. So when he thinks he's allowed to use a possession, doesn't realize it belongs to Kodesh. I mean, in that case, in the Me'ilah case, we're not talking about where he uses it knowing it's Hekdesh. He doesn't know it's Hekdesh. So that's classic Me'ilah. But the point is that Rashi's making, the Gemara seems to be making, is that he wouldn't have used it at all if not for the fact that Beit Din told him, what your wife owns, you are allowed to use. So he went there thinking Beit Din told me I had the right to use it because he didn't know it was Hekdesh. So therefore, you might think that it's Beit Din that committed the Me'ilah by being Maknetir. So that shows, though, in that Rashi, that all these rules you have in the Gemara about various ways that we run society seem to be ascribed to the Beit Din, the court of each generation. If that were true, then that would mean that today, if you're going to apply any of these rules about Afka'inu, about saying that we can uproot certain marriages, it sounds like you're saying it on the strength of the authority of a current Beit Din. But the Ravan held, we don't have authority in our current Bate Din, in our current rabbinic courts, to do such things, and therefore it should mean, at least according to the Ravan, that you can't have Afkat Kiddushin today. However, he does note that this is the Ravan, it seems to be a lone opinion here, that there are many, many Rishonim who disagree with the Ravan and think that you can have Afkat Kiddushin even nowadays, but he thinks it's relevant to the whole earlier discussion that he was responding to in the Sridi Eish. He thinks this is an important note, an important source that the Sridi Eish didn't deal with. And then he closed by saying that also there's a whole arichus, there was a whole lengthy discussion in the earlier responsum about Kiddushei Mumar. So Kiddushei Mumar is, let's say, somebody who is not observant, who has left Judaism. Today, this whole status is a little murky because today we have lots of people who we will define as what we call Tinokot Shenishbu. We'll define them as people who didn't know what they were doing, who were sort of raised in captivity. And a lot of people, I think, would say that about conservative Jews or reformed Jews. A Mumar is somebody who was raised knowing Judaism and knowing everything about Judaism. And there are some today who would say that even an Orthodox Jew who was raised in such an environment, if they left the religion, today wouldn't count as a Mumar in the full halakhic sense of it because of the social pressures and the social realities that say that it's okay to do X or Y or Z. Different discussion. But if you had a real Mumar, so, and that Mumar were to give Kiddushin to somebody, so the Beit HaLevi thinks that he assumes that this Mumar is like a regular Jew, and therefore the marriage is a full marriage, and therefore she has to either get a get or divorce, or, you know, she is a married woman. And that would be a discussion of its own, but the Tzvi Deishin apparently assumed the other way, that if you qualify the person as a real Mumar, as really somebody who's abandoned religion, that their Kiddushin doesn't get a Kiddushin, and that she's okay. So that's what this Dr. Roth wanted to tell, or chose to tell, or write to the Sri Deish. Sri Deish responds on the 20th of Sivan, which you'll note is 15 days, 1958, 15 days later, and starts with an apology that it took him so long to get to the letter. He says, Yislach li b'tuvo al ichor tshuvati, that I took so long to get you the letter, but I was busy with writing things l'halakha ulema'aseh, writing things that have real halachic, that have practical halachic applications, so therefore you just had to wait at the end of the line. I just think it's interesting because I see other tshuvot, other respondents who take longer to get back to people and don't start with these guys. I think it's just their rhythm. So the Sri Deish seems to have had the rhythm in which he attempted to answer things much more quickly than a 2-week window. So now, when coming back to the topics at hand, he says, you know, I don't have this book, Mekor Mayim Chayim, and I didn't see the Ravan. And then he says, "Miyom shecharev Beit Midrashenu beBerlin." From the time that our Beit Midrash in Berlin, he was the last rector, the last head of the Hildesheimer seminary in the 1800s. Rav Zil Hildesheimer started a yeshiva in Berlin for the purpose of ordaining rabbis, and it was yeshiva, it was a Beis Medrash, was this, and the Shvi Eish was the last head of it until the Nazis closed it down, I think, in 1940. So he says, from then, I don't have, litzari, all the sfarim that I need, all of the necessary books to really learn and research well, and I have only what, you know, I have a small amount that Rabbi Dr. Leo Jung got to. He was the rabbi of the Jewish Center. He apparently had some connection to the Shvi Eish, who was living in Montreux, Switzerland after the war, and he got him sort of a smallish, what feels to the Shvi Eish like a smallish library. I don't have these svarim. So the whole question of svarim always interests me. Now we have things like the Bar Ilan and online and Hebrew books and all those things. So our libraries are very, very large. But it's interesting to watch which respondents, which Gedolei Torah of our past have which svarim at hand and ready and available to them. And then if he was in a line that I think is completely sincere and in that sense maybe a wake-up call for those of us who are not the Shvi Eish. He says, "Umeod meod ani mitaveh lirot divrei ha-ra'avan bedvar mekor mayim chayim b'mekoram." I so much, I very, very much would love to see that Ra'avan and the Sefer Mekor Mayim Chayim in their original. And if I can, I'm going to try to find them, and I'm going to try to get a chance to see them. So that longing, that wanting, that yearning to acquire a source is, I think, something that's not so common and not so obvious that somebody would like that. Meaning, if you told me that, you know, in this topic that you're learning, and you've seen 60 sources on it, and you think you have a very good grasp of the situation, right, or you have a reasonably good grasp of the situation, but there's one more source that you haven't seen, and we're going to see that the Ra'avan is very much a lone idea, we don't follow him because he's not really the halachic mainstream on this topic. How much would it matter to you to be able to see it firsthand? And I think that aspect of it is something that marks Gedolim, that their connection to Torah, their interest in Torah, and their yearning to know it in its fullest sense expresses itself in things like this. That being so, he says, but from what you've told me, the words of the Ra'avan are very odd. He says muflaim or surprising, and they're alone opinion. The kol arishonim cholkim, and I think that pretty much everybody else disagrees, because we matirim eshet ish be'ed echad l'shitat Rashi mitam kol mekadesh dat rabban mekadesh. For example, let's say that a woman, sadly, her husband passes away, and the question then becomes, how do we know that he passed away? And the halacha in the Torah and the Gemara is that we accept one witness, and that is clearly in the Gemara a takanad rabbanan, a rabbinic ordinance, because of the problem of agunot, right? Because the problem of men who disappear. Agunot in the time of the Gemara was much, and for most of Jewish history, was much more a problem of men who disappear almost always against their will, meaning they die, but they die in circumstances where people didn't know what had happened to them, and there's not good information about what happened to them. So you have women who will just be stuck. And being stuck is a terrible thing in life. So one of the things that Chazal did was, he said, if you have one witness, and that one witness doesn't even have to be a formal halachic witness. It can be all sorts of people who don't give formal halachic testimony in Beit Din, but for this purposes, we can accept them. So how does that work? How did Rabbanan be able to come along and say that one witness can do this, can perform this function for us? It was an important function, but you need the practicalities of it, the mechanics of it have to work. So Rashi's understanding was that it's based on this principle, called Mekadesh, Adata de Rabbanan Kadesh. When a man marries a woman, that marriage is always resting on the foundation of the agreement of Chazal, and that means that it trusts Chazal that if they decide there's a time that they want to unilaterally end this marriage, they have the power to do so. Now, you should know that comes up in today, people, and it might be where the Shvi Eish even got into the discussion, it comes up today when people want to say, well, if a man is going to refuse to give his wife a get in circumstances where, you know, they're not getting back together, and he just refuses to give her a get, and they need a get, and they have a civil divorce, stuff like that, why don't you say, called Mekadesh, the Rabban Kadesh? There are those who suggested such a thing. I think that might be the context here. So whether or not we would go that far with it, but in terms of whether or not we apply it today in examples that the Gemara already had, Rashi's showing you that example, certainly it seems to be that that's what we do according to Rashi's opinion. So too, Dalet Amot Beget. Let's suppose a man throws a get to a woman. Let's remember that getting divorced isn't always an emotionally placid time. Often, unfortunately and sadly, there's bad feelings between the divorcing husband and wife. So let's say instead of giving it to her or doing it in a way that everybody will agree that works, let's say he says, fine, you want a divorce? And he has a sofa, right? And he throws it to her. When he throws it to her, it doesn't get to her. She doesn't catch it. It lands within her dalet amot, within her four amot. And then, let's say, something happens to it. So she never actually picks it up. She never actually takes more possession of it than that. That it fell into her, close proximity, and he goes away, and he's gone. We don't know where he is. Or he's absolutely refusing to write another get, or whatever. Is it valid? So according to the Ramban, the reason why we hold it, that it's valid in that situation, is for the same reason. So too, let's say a woman says, I cannot stay married to you because I had an affair. So however that works, but the Ran there in Adarim thinks also that it works by Afkina Rabbana. Also, there are sources that think there's a Rashi and a Rashba who think that in any case, when we force a get, so there are kids in Halacha today, we're very, very leery about forcing, coercing, getting. But in the time of the Gemara, in the time of Shulchan Aruch, in the time of Rishonim, there were certain circumstances in which it was assumed to be perfectly acceptable and perfectly proper to coerce the husband to give the get. Now, you can't coerce him to give the get because he has to say he wants to do it, because a get can only be given with the husband's free will. But so what we do halachically is we coerce him, however is acceptable in that particular circumstance, to coerce the husband. And we coerce him not to the point that he gives the get, but to the point that he says, I want to give the get. So how that works, since it's obviously legal fiction, is an interesting question. There's a famous, it's not in this tshuva, but when I say famous, I try usually not to say famous about things because I don't think that we all know everything, but I've heard this, so many people refer to this Rambam in so many different circumstances that I think it's actually famous. But the Rambam says that there, it's that we're coercing him to do what his soul really wants to do. That all of our souls really want to do the right thing. And there are just times when we get lured by various temptations to not do the right thing. So in this case, maybe, you know, his ego is getting in the way, whatever. That's how it is. For the Rambam, it would sound like it's valid because we really believe that when he says he wants to, he actually wants to in some deeper way. But Rashi and the Rashba, the Shvi Deish tells us, they think that that's not what's going on. What's going on is, it's mitam afkir rabbanan, that the Chazal uprooted the marriage in that situation, that where it's appropriate to coerce them to give a get, Chazal uprooted the marriage. So I have them give a get at all. I assume that the Rashi and the Rashba, I don't have them in front of me, but I assume the Rashi and the Rashba would say that so that people see a get and they see the form of a get, and that's why we also have him make sure to say, I want to give the get, because you want to make it look like a valid get in all other ways, but it's fundamentally working by Afkina. So too, if you have a get, where nobody put the date in the get. So a get is supposed to have a date. So then Muki Yosef in the beginning of Sanhedrin held that was also an Afkeinu case. So you give a get and then you find it has no time, that we say the marriage is over anyway, because in all the situation we're worried about her getting married without realizing that she's not allowed to. So that's another case of Afkeinu. So none of those, it's not that those cases said this to the age. It's not that those cases are a problem for the Ravon. The Ravon could have other answers to those questions. He could say, for example, that maybe with there's one witness to the death of the husband, the Ravan could hold, because it's not clear in the Gemara, that's not a rabbinic ordinance, it's actually a Doraita principle, that the Torah said that one witness is good enough for those kinds of situations, as the Rambam held. There is a side point in this tshuva that I don't want to get into, because I think the back and forth just gets complicated, but where he points out that there are reasons to think, there are places where the Mishkanos Yaakov, it's a problem, he has a problem with the Mishkanos Yaakov. Mishkanos Yaakov seems to see that Rashi agrees with the Ravan, and yet there are cases where we know where Rashi had said Afkeinu, but he thinks that those might be cases where you'd have to say that Rashi thinks that in some cases that Chazal of old preemptively were mafkia all sorts of kedushin that were to come. But that if we have to actively apply something in our times, maybe that would be a problem. But that if it's something that was anticipated ahead of time, they could preemptively uproot it, and that would say that maybe Rashi agrees partially with the Ravan on that issue. But then the Zudei says, he thinks really that the Ravan is falling in with the Tosfos in Yevamos, who says, and the Ravan wrote, we don't say that nowadays, meaning maybe it's not only halacha about hafkaat kiddushin, it's about uprooting kiddushin, which would, I could have imagined being an exception, because I could have imagined somebody that we put an explicit t'nai in all our kiddushins. But the Ravan commenting on that also seems to think that no, it's a function of that, and the whole idea that Chachamim had the power to uproot Torah ideas, which is certainly true in the Gemara. There are issues, for example, you know, we don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah on Shabbos. So that's a hafkah, that's an uprooting. It's a hafkah b'sheva al taseh, with just not with desisting from activity rather than acting, but it's a hafkah, it's an uprooting of something in the Torah. The Ravan thought all of that power was only time of the Gemara. But according to Rashi, who says the whole reason why we can uproot a marriage, why the Chazal can uproot a marriage, is because the husband says, Kedan Moshe v'Yisrael, then when you say Kedem Moshav Yisrael, it should be the rabbis of your time as well, and that would mean in our time it should be a valid possibility as well. And that's what the Shudesh suggested in his earlier writing, that just like with gifts, when we say that Chazal can uproot gifts and say that certain monies belong to us, we say Hefker, Beit, and Hefker, and things like that, and that we sometimes do even today, that would be so true here. You can turn the money, he gave her a gift, right? He gave her money. But we can say that money is for Kiddushin, that money is for a gift. And so the Shri Deish thinks that when you say, Kedat Moshe of Yisrael, you don't mean Yisrael, the Chazal, the rabbis of the time of the Gemara. Chazal means the Chazal of our time, Beit Din in our time, and that would mean that a Beit Din should have the power to be Mafkia in our times. This is, as I said before, a very daring thesis because it has very broad ramification. When he said Kedat Moshe of Yisrael. And maybe the Ramban, he says, by the way, only wrote it about places where Chazal didn't say it explicitly. That maybe the Ravan only meant it when the Gemara mentions only the idea of Afkeinu Rabbani Kiddushin, meaning Chazal uprooted a Kiddushin. But there are other places where the Gemara says, called the Mekadesh Adat to the Rabbani Mekadesh. Now, some people assume that those are both exactly the same. The reason and the way that Chazal can uproot things is because we make an explicit condition of Kedat Moshe of Yisrael. But you could also suggest, says the Sri Deish, that the Ravan would have held, no, there are two different things. There's sometimes where Chazal just has the power to uproot things, and even if the man had gotten married without saying Kedat Moshe of Yisrael, and the marriage taking effect, they could still uproot it. That, maybe the Ravan said, we don't have the power to do today, but the power is up. So, for example, Bitul Eged or Ones, where the Gemara says explicitly, called Mekadesh, that's the Ravan Mekadesh, there maybe the Ravan would agree that that's a whole different thing. That maybe there, in other words, maybe there are two tracks. There's power of Chazal to uproot track, and then there's also the man did it by consent, put in the explicit openness, the consent of Chazal, and that would be a different way of doing it. So he points out now that the Rivash in Shin Sadi Tet speaks about communities that have said, made a rule that you have to have a minion there for your Kiddushin, and if you do Kiddushin without 10, we say the money is Hefker, we say the money doesn't belong to you anymore, and therefore it's just a gift that you gave her, it's money that you threw away and she happened to pick up, and the Kiddushin go away. And the Rivash, it said in that Shuva, the Kehal Yeshla Reshut La Sot Kain. He thinks that communities have the right to do that, and then the person who does a Kiddushin without a minion there will not be valid. So, and he says, so look at the Rivash, you'll see, he brings proofs there that that this is still valid. So there's three things saying, I think as a halachic construct, this idea that we do have the power, at least communities have the power to make such rules, I think it would be clear. Now, he doesn't say it here, he might have said it in the earlier conversation, but we've already spent almost half an hour just going through his understanding of these issues that we have them in front of us, but the implication would be that if people were to say, you know, anybody who gets married and later on refuses to give a get, even after a civil divorce, as a simple example, that Kiddushin will go away. We are mafkia that Kiddushin. Now, this is not an idea that other people accepted, so the Shri Deish would be sort of a lone opinion on this. I'm not saying that we would therefore follow it, but that's the idea that he's presenting. He's saying, I'm not sure why it's not true that we have the ability to do that. And you see in the Rivash that even in the 13 and 1400s, communities felt the right to make certain rules, and that, and if you didn't follow those rules, your marriage wouldn't be a marriage. So in those cases, it might be that it's early on in the marriage, but they haven't actually had a marriage because they just got married without the minion. Maybe it's easier to unwind it or to separate the two. In any case, that's where the discussion goes. And then when he comes to the Beis HaLevi, he says, you know, I knew that Beis HaLevi. Sorry, I didn't say I knew that Beis HaLevi. He says, there's nothing new in that Beis HaLevi. Lots and lots of poskim hold that way, that a mumar is a full Jew, and that's what we generally assume. He says, I was just writing my discussion according to those who think that the kedushin of a mumar are not kedushin, that if a mumar has left Judaism so fully, that that person doesn't create a valid kedushin. And I was trying to explain how that would work, and that's how it came up in that conversation. So that is the tshuva of the Shri Deish responding to a letter from Rav Dr. Yekutiel Ze'ev Roth, Dr. William Roth of New York, questioning the Shri Deish's claims about the possibility of Afkeinu Rabban, of uprooting marriages in our times. And that is a response for the 5th of Sivan. It is the last of the cycle, although, you know, if you're listening to this, it's not going to feel like the last to you, because it'll just continue again, you know, the day after Shavuos, if you're in Israel, and if you want to listen to the 7th of Sivan or the 8th of Sivan, then. And then we'll go on from there, and I will be filling out now the rest of the 2 weeks that I didn't do. But with thanks to all of you who are listening, and I hope you find this productive, and I'd love to hear from anybody who has comments to make. My email is grothst@gmail.com. I appreciate your time and sharing time with me learning Torah, and I hope you find these productive things, and I wish you all a Chag Kosher V'sah, Chag Sameach, with the coming of Matan Torah, that it be a time for all of us to rededicate ourselves to the proper study and the proper learning of Torah, and that these tshuvot be part of the building of Torah in our lives over the course of this coming holiday and the year to come. Have a great day.